Hi, this is Kirsten from MK Let's Talk About It, and this is our special summer solo series. Say that 5 times fast. Okay, so today's episode is going to be about imposter syndrome. I know Maria and I have talked about imposter syndrome in the past, even if we may have brushed over it a little bit. We've often referenced it when we talk about our roles, our positions, things that we've been maybe promoted to or asked to do, and there's kind of like this lingering concern that maybe we aren't up to the challenge. So I know we've talked about it, but we've never really have dug deep into it. And I'll be honest, it's something that I learned about in grad school very briefly. It was just kind of said in class in passing, and that we would inevitably feel it when we started our professions. And I feel like over the summer, over this job that I currently have, I'm going into my fifth school year, excuse me. And I often find myself kind of battling my skill sets and battling what I'm capable of doing. And a part of that is tied to imposter syndrome. And many people feel it. So I just feel like this would be a good opportunity to just kind of talk about it. And first and foremost, like we've done in the past, know that if you suffer from imposter syndrome, you're definitely not alone. And it will come and go. It will pop up when you least expect it. And especially among women and women of color in leadership roles, I feel like I probably have more conversations with that group, with just the trying to establish where what we can and cannot do, how we can and cannot present ourselves, how we have to hold and carry ourselves, the tones which we have to create, the space in which we have to create, the inclusivity that we have to create all the time, while also trying to be firm and directive and all these things. So, this is not just to women of color, but in general, like everybody experiences this at some point. Well, not everybody, a bulk of people experience this at some point. So I figured I would spend a few minutes just giving you some insights. And I'm not quite sure if I'm going to give you any solutions to it, but other than calling it out for what it potentially is, like what you could potentially be feeling, and sometimes just being able to put a word to it, or a theme to it, or some sort of whatever definition to it, can sometimes be helpful in helping you process through it. So imposter syndrome is, in short, it's really just doubting yourself. It's doubting your abilities and just feeling like you don't deserve to be where you are. Your accomplishments aren't really yours. They belong to someone else, or you only got there because of X, Y, or Z. And oftentimes we forget how hard it is to get to where we are. And I think in this day and age, there's a lot of kind of reasons. I just saw an article. It was really weird. It wasn't even an article. It was on Facebook or whatever. And it was comparing Zendaya to Keke Palmer. And they were talking about colorism and how Keke Palmer should be more famous, right? She should be more famous. She should have at least as much money as Zendaya. And in the article, they were talking about like colorism plays a role because Zendaya is light skinned and she definitely leans towards more the standardized definition of beauty. And this is not necessarily tied to imposter syndrome, but again, I'm not saying it's not wrong. We know we are in a society that has some really hard problems recognizing people's talents and really acknowledging those talents. But oftentimes what happens when people hear that, and I will speak from personal experience, when I've been told or it's been alluded to that maybe I've only gotten so far, I'm only in my role or whatever, because I'm light skinned, I'm a token, I'm a this or a that. It's very hard to think about all the work that I've put into to get to where I am, right? And so, and that's all kind of tied to imposter syndrome, right? It's really this idea that like your work, your effort, your education, your this, your that, or the other, like you, it's just not good enough, and you're not good enough to be where you are. So that's a loose definition of imposter syndrome. And I recently read an article, it was posted, I believe, back in March of this year, was on the Muse, and I can post it in our blog. And it's the five different types of imposter syndrome. And I actually never heard of different types. So this is actually a new thing for me to get into. So there's a woman by the name of Dr. Valerie Young who wrote a book. It's called The Secret Thoughts of Successful Women: Why Capable People Suffer from the Imposter Syndrome and How to Thrive in Spite of It. And in her book and in her research, she's explored the different types of how to feel like you are not adequate. And she poses in the Muse article, and I'm sure within the book, I unfortunately have not read the book, but I really would be interested in checking it out. There are a series of questions that you potentially ask yourself to figure out which one kind of suits you. And as I was reading them, I was like, oh, I feel like there's like three of these that seem seem to be me. But yeah, I'll maybe have Maria listen to my little recording and she can tell me where she thinks I may fall. So the five forms of imposter syndrome, according to Dr. Valerie Young, is the perfectionist, the superwoman or man, the natural genius, the soloist, and the expert. I will try to just give some brief. I'm utilizing the Muse as kind of my insight. My quotations are really coming from that article. Again, I'll post it, make sure that it gets the level of props that it should have. It was written by Melody Wilding. So yeah, so the perfectionist. It's perfectionists set excessively high goals for themselves, and then when they fail, they suffer from major self-doubt. And so the questions that the Muse poses to make you think about is the perfectionist the form that you are experiencing? It asks, have you ever been accused of being a micromanager? And do you find it difficult delegating? And if you miss your insanely high mark, your insanely high goal, whatever you set, do you accuse yourself of not being cut out for that job? There's a few other questions, but so I feel like I've met a lot of people who suffer from kind of the perfectionist where everything has to be 100%, and if it's not, they're afraid. I think that they've expressed to me that they're afraid that other people will view them as stupid. It's like almost being afraid to ask the question when you need help on a project. I see it a lot at work where I'm seeing performance not being up to par, and then kind of hearing through the woods, through the wind, that they need, like, so and so needs more support, but they don't want to ask. And in my mind, and being in my leadership roles I've had in the past, I'm like, well, how can I know what kind of support and what kind of whatever I can give them if they're afraid to ask? And that's not necessarily imposter syndrome technically, but I think it's all kind of wrapped into it, right? Just kind of that fear of appearing stupid to people, even when you're learning and growing. In some spaces, that can be really hard. And so just be aware of that. Like, it's okay. It's okay to ask for help. Mental and emotional health. Maria and I tell you to find your mouth guards, to go find your person, your therapist, your counselor, your whomever. Like, find your mouth guard, take care of that. And I think in terms of like work and projects, growing, learning, education, find somebody that you feel comfortable to go ask. If you're afraid of the boss, you're afraid of what they might say, they'd be like, we hired you to do this. The expectations that you know how, which I know I've said, like, I'm like, yo, this was your job description. I expect you to at least meet that. You know, like, find your person to go talk to you, because that will just make work 100 times better if you can just feel confident in being able to ask those questions and be able to vent and be able to do whatever. So that's one form, the perfectionist. The second one, as I said, was superwoman or superman. And they, I guess this version, according to the muse, they feel like they're phonies. They don't feel like they're real amongst their colleagues. So they push themselves harder to measure up. They cover up their insecurities. They overload themselves to a point of harm. They say probably yes to everything. And they just add to their plate, and they continue to add to their plate because they don't think that they are stepping up to the plate the way their colleagues are. And so they're just really overworking themselves, overdoing themselves. So the questions that they say to ask yourself to see if this one fits you, and I'll only pose a couple of the questions, is are, excuse me, are, do you stay later at the office than the rest of your team, even past the point that you've completed the day's necessary work? And do you feel like you haven't truly earned your title? Despite your degrees, your achievements, your years of experience, whatever else, do you feel like you don't deserve to be where you are? I remember, and we talk about this a lot in DEI work. Again, that's diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI for short. We talk about, you know, people of color, black and brown people, women, et cetera. A lot of groups who have often been marginalized through history are taught in a lot of ways. I would say it really leans towards women and people of color, is this idea that you have to work twice as hard to be seen half as good. And I remember going after, I think, my master's degree or some sort of certificate. And I'm like sitting in this program, and a lot of the stuff I was learning, and I'll use learning loosely, although I love my master's degree, so this shout and is not in any way disrespect to that experience. But what I realized is that I was in a program where I had been doing the work, and I've been doing it for years, but I have to go get this piece of paper that says I'm able to do what I have been doing in order to be recognized and justified for my knowledge, right? And being in a conversation with people and the alphabet soup that I yearn for after my name, I'm like, why do I find it so important to have an abundance of letters after my name? Why is it important for me to have the degrees and certificates? Like, where does that come from? And honestly, I think it really stems from, like, because then if people reckon, like, if people can see this, they will realize that I know what I'm talking about. Like, I'm actually well versed in this kind of topic or in this field. And even though I'm far from an expert, and I would never claim that no matter how long I worked on anything, I do know something, you know, and I do know a level of what I'm talking about. And especially in a male-dominated world, in most office culture worlds, it's amazing how differently you get treated when they see the letters after your name versus how they treat you when they just see you. And so, again, these are a little, it's a little bit more in depth than what this article is talking about, but just kind of things that kind of pop up, and recognizing, like, these five tools, these five titles may be kind of a broad overview, but understanding the intersectionality of oppression and institutionalized racism and et cetera, and how there's more involved in these explorations, right? And again, this Dr. Young may have gone more in depth in her book. Like I said, I haven't read it. I really look forward to checking it out. Yeah. Number three is the natural genius. And they say that these types are, they judge their competence based on the speed of getting things done, and as opposed to their efforts, right? So if they can get it done quick, they can get it done fast, they clearly know what they're doing, and the longer it takes them to get it done, the harder they are on themselves. And so they might, again, similar to actually many of them, set those pretty high standards of getting things done. The expectation is that if they don't meet that expectation, they judge harshly on themselves. And sometimes the time of all of it can be really impactful. So questions they say to ask yourself if it applies to you, which this is one of the ones where I'm like, I feel a little bit leaning towards this one in some roles that I've had in my past. So some of the questions they ask are you used to excelling without much effort? Thinking like in school, being able to do well to get the straight A's, to get the gold stars on everything you do, you're kind of looked to as the standard. And I know this goes all the way back to when I was in like elementary school, and I would race classmates to who could get done with the math tests faster, or who could finish the chapter of the book that we're reading faster. And knowing that I felt some type of way if I didn't win, and how that has played out throughout my life. Like, I'm like, I am one of those people that I feel like my procrastination allows me to have to really show up in a short amount of time, and being able to get it done real quick. So even when I'm not procrastinating, I'm like, if I can't get this done within so many hours, then I've failed. I like right now I'm working on this data for my program, and it should have been done weeks ago. And I'm supposed to be enjoying my summer, and I didn't get it done. And it bothers me so much. Like, and I've had this whole week, this last 2 weeks of me trying to work on it on top of the conference that I had to be at. It has stressed me out, and I referenced in a previous episode that I've been emotional, a little bit more on myself recently. And I think a part of that is because I haven't finished this task. It's taking me way longer than I thought it should. I thought it would take me just a couple of days, and it's really not. And so I feel like this one hits close to home. And then another question you can ask yourself is, when you're faced with a setback, does your confidence tumble because you're not performing well? And does that feeling provoke shame? Or a feeling of shame, excuse me. And then another question is, do you often avoid challenges because it's so uncomfortable to try something you're not great at? And let me tell you something, personally, that last question hits it's a little too close to me. Because I do like to say that I'm willing to go out and try new things and put myself out there and take some risks. But I also know, like, I think again, Marie and I talked about this, and I think when we were talking about, oh, what was it? We were talking about jobs, I think. And I think I said something along the lines of, I don't know what else I could possibly do. I went into education because I know I'd be good at it. And all of my education has been around working in academia, right? And the fear of failing anywhere else is so terrifying that it almost makes you feel stagnant. And so I definitely, that last one really hits home. Like, it does, I do feel incredibly uncomfortable. Even if it's getting a promotion within my job, I know in my previous life, before working in my current position, I felt like I moved up too fast. And although I did have some skill sets, there were things that I was lacking terribly in my mind. And although my supervisor felt differently, it was just so uncomfortable and so nerve-wracking that I don't think I ever fully found my footing. I think that staff who knew me well, staff that I specifically hired, kind of did the things, and I felt like I could really do my job with them, but staff who'd been there longer than me, staff who were older than me, who just felt some type of way about having a young supervisor, like that stuff really hit home. And there are still a lot of things I still need to learn, but yeah, like that one hit hard. So for me, the natural genius is one of the ones that I am kind of like, that's kind of me. Number four is the soloist. And so the soloist needs to do everything by themselves. It's kind of similar to the Superman, Superwoman thing, where you just, and the perfectionist, you set really high bars, but you have to do it by yourself. You can't count on your team. It's if you want it done right, you got to do it yourself. That's kind of the vibe I'm getting from the soloist. You just refuse assistance from other people. So questions you can ask to know if you are suffering from this is, do you firmly feel that you need to accomplish things on your own? And I don't need anyone's help. If saying that resonates with you, like I'm like, yeah, I've said that before. This could be a form of imposter syndrome that you're experiencing. I don't feel like I'm the soloist in any way. I like teams. I like delegating. I like forming teams with people who have skill sets that are not mine. For example, I am a big picture thinker. I come up with ideas. I look at policies and figure out really intentional ways to implement. But the plan, I need a planner on my team. I need someone who can take that big idea and really break it down into to tasks. I think that's why goal setting is kind of hard for me specifically, especially things like SMART goals. Because in SMART goals, you have to break it down. You got to put time limits on it. You have to really get it down to that nitty-gritty. So something that I feel should be something easy to get to, you need like 30 steps. And I'm like, I don't think so linearly that way. I can't break it down that way. So I love teams. And anyways, this is not about me. I'm just trying to give general information. The last one is the expert. And the expert measures their competence based on what and how much they know, and believing that they don't know enough. And that if they get caught in not knowing enough, they will be exposed or found out for not being good enough. And some of the questions, it's not funny. Some of the questions you can ask yourself is, do you shy away from applying to job postings unless you meet every single requirement? Where was the, there was a question on here that was, it has something to do with like, you keep going back to school. Oh, it says, this is the quote. It's true that there's always more to learn. Striving to bulk up your skill set can certainly help you make strides professionally and keep you competitive in the job market. But taken too far, the tendency to endlessly seek out more information can actually be a form of procrastination. And when I read that line, I never heard anything that had resonated with me so much. I feel like I'm constantly in school. And I keep going back and I'm like, once I'm done with this, I gotta go do this. And even now, I'm in a doctorate program and I've already committed. I told my boss, I'm like, hey, if I'm still here, if I'm still on the trajectory that you want me to be on, once I finish this doctorate, I will go into this director program, which is about a year or 2 year, years, so I can understand the ins and outs of his role, even though I work pretty closely with him now. And I don't necessarily need it. And so I just feel like, yeah, I'm constantly going back to school. I'm constantly seeking more knowledge on topics. And I refuse. I think one of the questions had to do with like, does being called an expert make you shudder or something like that? And I'm like, for example, I've been doing DEI work for 15, 16 years. It's been a long time. But if you ask me if I'm an expert in it, I'd be like, oh goodness, no, not even close. I've only scratched the surface. There are tons of people who know more than me. I need to go and learn more. I need to go to this. I need to go to that. but I've been doing the work for 15, 16 years. So I have some knowledge that I can share, but still terrified. And so that is the five types of imposter syndrome. And again, I feel like if you can put kind of a name to something that you're feeling, it can sometimes help you explore how to work through it. Again, I will post the Muse and the title of the book and Where to Get It by Dr. Young on the blog. So you can just kind of read what I've kind of already talked about and get a little bit more in depth what both the Muse and the book does that I'm not going to do on this particular podcast episode is kind of give you some steps on how to work through it. Just because it'll take up a lot of time and I already feel like I've been talking a lot. But yeah, I think this past summer, this and in my current role, I've been humbled a few times, and I was at a conference recently, and it was technically organized by me as the kind of lead for my program, and I invited all of these people outside of my program, the program staff, and we went off and we, you know, the goal was I just try to make sure that people A, have a good time, and B, learn. And so I wanted people to come and learn about this program and get a little bit more in depth about what the objectives are and what we try to do, what college and career access looks like through these programs, how it can look six through 12, right? Grade level 6 through 12, what can it look like in each grade level, et cetera. And then, you know, we have evenings, and when you're at a conference, like you form and you connect and you do whatever. And, you know, it didn't go according to plan. And I know a lot of people felt some type of way about kind of how the evenings went and some of the disconnectedness and, you know, this, that, and the other. And for some people, the looseness worked, and for others, it didn't. And at the end of the day, because I am the lead of this thing and because I organized this thing, it comes down on me to kind of grow and learn and revamp to make sure that everybody gets a little bit of what they need when they go to a conference or they go to an event or they go to a whatever. And I think when I feel like I've failed because I didn't know, it's one of those things, maybe I need to learn a little bit more about who was going with me. Maybe I need to learn more about whatever it is, you know, so I can make better decisions. And so it has really made me feel some type of way. There, you know, some of the engagement with some of my colleagues that I've had in the past has shifted just a little bit. I don't expect it to stay that way, but I can tell that it's there. And it is what it is. And I'm going to feel how I feel. And some people are like, Kirsten, you're thinking too much about it. You're putting too much emotional weight on it. You're doing this, that, or the other. And I'm like, yeah, I probably am. But I definitely suffer from imposter syndrome all the time. And so all the time. And so when things really don't go according to plan, or when I get conflicting messages, or if I get something from somebody who tells me that I failed, even if they don't say it that way, I immediately take it that way. And so right now I'm just trying to work through that, because I'm human, right? And I'm never going to be perfect. I don't strive for perfection. But I do strive to be the best version of myself, every day. And so, yeah, work right now is hard. I'm kind of terrified to go into the new school year because I don't feel, based off of the things I've learned over the course of this summer, that I haven't showed up or showed out for my staff. And people will tell me differently. Other people will be like, you absolutely haven't. I will hear all sides of the version of that. And at the end of the day, I will still take personal accountability that I haven't shown up the way I needed to for each individual person. And those things that I already know are not my skill sets. So like I said, I like to plan a team around skill sets, right? And if I don't feel like I have that team that has the skill sets I'm missing, I have to recognize what I need to bring up, especially if I'm supposed to be the lead of this group. And I don't think I've risen to the occasion in that. So this is just kind of me venting now. Sorry. But for all those who may be listening to this podcast and recognize that, like, yeah, I've had these moments, I've had the self-doubt, these concerns, just know that it's totally normal, and you can work through it, and there's ways to work through it, there's ways to grow. But I'm not gonna say you're gonna work through it and grow through it and act like you're never gonna experience it again. Because every time I feel like I've figured it all out and I'm ready to go on to the next thing, it turns out that I didn't. I just figured out that thing. And so yeah, that's just be cognizant of that and just know that life is not linear, right? Work is not linear. Leadership is not linear. There's obviously different types of leadership, and you have to be a good enough leader to recognize that when the type that you are most confident in is not necessarily the one that your staff needs, that you have to learn how to adjust. And it's exhausting, and you're never going to get it right because you have the one, you have a style. Everybody has a style, and your natural tendency is to go to your style. And you just have to be patient with yourself. You have to be patient with what you do. Be reflective. I will always be reflective. I sent out an email recently to the staff who went on this conference with me, and really just apologized for where I feel like I personally failed them as a group, right? And I've gotten some really great messages, either directly, like they've come and talked to me face to face. I've gotten a couple of emails back. I'm not expecting to hear from everybody, but like I've reflected, I've talked to a few people, I've talked to third party people who were not involved in any way to just kind of like, let's process through this. Am I overthinking it? What could I have done differently? And I've gotten many different types of feedback. And I just think like taking that time to reflect on decisions made in the job, I mean, and personally too, of course, but like any time that you're taking to just really reflect and think about how you did things, why you did it that way, why you said it that way, why you presented that way. Did this have the impact you were looking for? No? Okay. What can you do differently? How can you say it differently? How can you present differently? And just keep going. And of course, your team is going to change over time. I'm not going to work with the same 20-ish people I work with now in 10 years. It's just facts. I'm not going to be working with the same group of people. So I'm going to have to readjust. But for me to feel good and confident and aware of just feel like I belong where I'm at, that I didn't get there for false reasons, that I deserve my spot, I have to do that constant reflection and just make sure like, oh, next year, when it's time to do this thing, these are now the new steps that I'm going to need to present and how I'm going to present and how I'm going to show up for staff when they need support, when they won't ask me. They need a little bit more direction, or they need a little bit more this, or they need a little bit less that. And just really take it into future projects because I can't fix what's already past. I can only move forward. And so yeah, those are my words of wise. Imposter syndrome is real, and it impacts over 80%. If you go to Dr. Young's website, again, I'll post these links. It says that around 70 to 84% of people will experience imposter syndrome at some point. And in most positions, it's higher level kind of jobs, but it happens across the board. It doesn't matter what level you're in. You can be an entry level and be just new to the workforce. Think about all these young, fresh out of high school, fresh out of college, trying to get these like entry level, hardcore jobs. The trust. I remember going into that first job and being like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing here. I don't know what I was thinking. I'm not good enough to be here. So everybody experience like 84% experiences it. And they will experience it multiple times throughout their lifetime. So read the book, check out the article, dig into it deeper, learn about yourself, learn about the people you work alongside, I feel like sometimes the best way to be a good leader is knowing how your staff emotionally react, mentally react to things. What, even if they can't tell you what, if they are ever experiencing imposter syndrome, you can look for the signs in that. Along with a lot of different forms of mental and emotional health stuff. Like there's this kind of, you can see it. You can see it in like a behavior switch, facial expressions, those like nonverbal cues. And there's plenty of great books and seminars and trainings you can go to really dive deep into how to recognize some of those shifts in a person. We Marie and I talked about some of those trainings during May, in our May episodes when we were doing the Mental Health Awareness Month. So I definitely check it out. And that is my summer solo episode. I hope you got something out of it. Send us an email, subscribe, ask questions, tweet us, Instagram us, let us know what you think. Have a great day.
Thank you so much for listening. Please visit our website at mkletstalk.com. Find us on social media at mkletstalk. Please review, rate, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And we will be back to regularly scheduled podcast recording very soon.